Hello, my name's Emma and I'm interviewing on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and one another. It's 23rd of September 2009 at 4:24 a.m. Can I please have your name, date of birth and where you come from?
I'm Sarah Curtin. My date of birth is the 15th of February 1982 and I'm from Birmingham originally and now live in Liverpool.
How are you feeling now?
Nervous, I think. It was all very surreal turning up to. It was so easy to get through to London anyway compared to normally because it's so late at night. And then kind of turning up unceremoniously, unlike London, just parking at Trafalgar Square and seeing the plinths made me quite nervous actually. But I'm excited as well.
How did you find out about the project?
I saw an article in the paper. I'd heard about it, obviously, where I live. We've got the Iron Men on Crosby Beach, which is a really big fuss in Liverpool, and there's a lot of love for Anthony Gormley, so there was a lot of information about it in the local press, in the local paper. So I'd read about it there, and then I think I'd read about it in the Mirror while I was next to the computer, so I signed up straight away before I forgot.
What made you want to take part in it?
I'd watched a documentary about the statue of the disabled woman who was 8 months pregnant about 2 years ago, and how they were making the statue, and there was a lot of information about the plinths and its role as this, obviously it's going to get a permanent piece soon, but this kind of temporary nature of the statues. And then around the same time, Tracy Emin put a commission for a public statue up in Liverpool, and it's outside the main cathedral, the Anglican Cathedral, which is a huge dominium and building in Liverpool. I think it's maybe the fifth biggest cathedral in the world, and it's a tiny, maybe 3 inch high bronze bird. And the reasoning behind it was that public art is normally about wars and about battles and about victory or loss, and that she wanted to do something that was pastoral and natural, and that kind of got me thinking about the nature of statues, which I hadn't even thought about before. So when this came up, it related back again to this idea of what is a statue and what, why are things put on display, and I just thought it sounded like a really interesting project. I like everything of Anthony Gormley's that I've seen. So
how did you feel when you found out you'd been given a place?
I didn't get a place straight away. I got a phone call saying that someone had dropped out, and I was sat in a cafe in Liverpool with a hangover, eating a full breakfast, and it was just completely surreal. The phone came up and it was London, so I thought it might be one of my friends from uni, and it was a researcher telling me that I'd got a place. So I said I'd ring them back in a bit. And it was 5 a.m. in the morning. I was like, I don't even know how I'm going to get to London at 5 a.m. But then I was really excited. I didn't expect to get a place. It's just one of those things you apply for and take part in the process of applying, let alone get a place on it. So, yeah, I was excited.
What are you going to do up there?
I am going to knit for the MS Trust. It was a project last week, it's just spilling into this week, I think it lasted until Monday, where the MS Trust took part in an online archiving project for wills, and the idea was that you would tie a virtual knot online to remember charities like the MS Trust in your will, because obviously they're not as highly publicised or popular as maybe cancer charities and children's charities. So I was looking at that and trying to think about how I could support the MS Trust. My cousin, who is about 3 weeks younger than me, was diagnosed with MS last year. And my aunt's got MS, and my best friend from university is the fundraising manager for the MS Trust. So it seemed like a worthwhile thing to do. And I'd watched a lot of it before I'd even got a place online. I thought some of the stuff on the plinth almost seemed like an extension of things like X Factor, and this idea that people have got an hour of fame to showcase their talents, and that hadn't at all been something that I'd imagined the plinth to be. And I'm a musician, and I work professionally as a musician, So I could have got up there and played, but I've only just started knitting. So I thought I'd do something that I was a complete amateur at and sit up there and just have banners out and things for the MS Trust. Because I don't really like, I know people can do whatever they like up there, but I don't, it just seemed a bit of a turn on the head of the idea of what the piece was about for people to kind of use it as a chance to get a book deal or read their poetry or perform for those type of aims. So I thought I'd do the complete opposite.
So you come from Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
If you could describe it to someone who'd never been there before.
It's grand. It's a grand city with history seeped through it. And a dark history, particularly, it's on a big hill leading down into the river. And like a lot of cities that feel like they've just popped up, you can see the geography of Liverpool and why it happened and why it's there. And you can see from the top of the hill down pretty much the entire city and its history. A lot of it was built on slavery. The buildings, there's more Georgian buildings in Liverpool than any other place in the country, individual buildings and per 100 people or however it's kind of worked out on population. And all of the buildings down by the dockside have carvings of slavery and the kind of gold being brought in on black people's backs. And then newer, Liverpool's very much into its public art, and newer kind of commissions represent Liverpool's trade and history. So I think it's a very grand city, and it's been down on its heel and it's on its way back up, and there's an electric in the air, and it's a very exciting city. That's how I would describe Liverpool.
What was it like to grow up there?
I grew up in Birmingham.
Oh.
I moved to Liverpool when I was 22,
oh,
when I graduated uni. But growing up in Birmingham was very dark. It's a very industrial city, and I grew up in the 80s before a lot of the developments have happened. Now it's a very cosmopolitan city now. It's up there with London for a lot of the nighttime things, as well as the shopping and things like that. But I remember it being very industrial and very grey, and there's a lot of brutalist architecture, a lot of 70s concrete, and I remember it being big and high and dark.
What did your parents do?
My dad, when I was a kid, my dad worked in an art shop. I'm not quite sure what he did, except that he managed the shop, but he also worked somewhat to do with the artists. I know that the Shoe People was printed there. It was an art shop for kind of mass production of art equipment, and it did prints. It wasn't for the general public. And then when the recession came in the 80s, and the YTS scheme was brought in, my mum worked there as well as in the front office. They both lost their jobs there. So my mum went on to become a dinner lady and then trained as a lab technician, which is what she still does now. And my dad was unemployed for about 2 years, I think, and ended up getting a job as a traffic warden for the local authority. But my dad's very political and had been a Labour councillor for 20 years and immediately started working for the trade unions once he'd got in at the kind of bottom rung of the council. And eventually, because he kept winning all his trade union cases, the council offered him a job working for their side in the personnel department, and now he's worked his way up to be a head of personnel for the city council. So quite a trajectory of which I'm very proud.
What kind of relationship?
I'm really close to my parents. They're if I had met my parents through work or someone else's parents, I'd like them very much and respect them. They're not my friends, they're my parents, but they're smart people and they're kind people. And they know a lot about a lot of silly things and love quizzes and random trivia, and they're good to be around and they're fun to be around. Got a twin brother and an older brother. My older brother's 41. I've seen my twin brother's 42. He's 42 now. And my twin brother is 27, obviously.
What was it like being part of a twin?
I don't know, because I don't know what it was like not to be a twin. But I suppose There was always somebody about. Meeting people, particularly meeting only children, especially when I was at university and you've got that proximity with people. In comparison to that, I think it taught me to share. I've never ever considered anything as just belonging to me because I've never had something that's just belonged to me. It taught me to stand up for other people and to stand up for myself. So obviously we fought all the time, but I still wouldn't let anybody fight him. I think generally it teaches you to be part of a collective and a group, yet maintain your own identity as well, because there's this duality between wanting to be seen as an individual but still wanting to be recognised for that slightly odd difference that you've got, which is kind of hard to explain unless somebody else is a twin and then they just kind of get it. There's no words really to explain that.
What route did you go after?
I did my GCSEs and I went to college where I did A-levels. I got a scholarship to quite a upper class college in the Midlands, which I didn't enjoy at all, and I managed to get just what I needed in my A-levels with not much attendance to go on to music school. From about the age of 13, I'd wanted to go to Salford University to study popular music, which is like one of the best popular music schools in Europe. I wasn't ready at 18, so I took a year out, and I came to live in London for a year, and did a lot of temping work, music work, arts work. Then I went to Salford for 3 years in Manchester and did my popular music degree. Then I started a MPhil and a PhD whilst working at the university lecturing. I did that for a couple of years, took a break from the PhD, which I'm starting now, when I went to work for a theatre company directing, well, as an artist, an administrative director running the actual company for the theatre. And now I'm concentrating on my PhD studies again.
Where does your music side come from?
I'm not sure. There's no one on the next level, like father or mother on that level that I know of who's musical, but my twin brother and my older brother both play music, so I suppose we both got it from our older brother, who's, I'm a bass player and he's a bass player, and pretty much there's about 15 cousins at that level, and I think about 11 of us are musicians. Two are at music school as well. Well, I'm not anymore, but one's gone to the same music school that I went to, so it must be somewhere up in the upper echelons. My my great granddad was friends with Jack Judge, who wrote It's a Long Way to Tipperary, and he came from the same part of Birmingham obviously that we came from, and I think he used to play fiddle with him, so he's kind of dotted above and spread about, but not immediately above apart from my older brother.
To get out of playing music,
I don't enjoy anything as much as playing, even just in a practice room or on my own. It's cathartic, it's relaxing. It's something that requires a lot of really frustrating, minute work to get anywhere with to begin with. So every time you pick something up and you can just play it without thinking, it's testament to a lot of hard work, I think. I think people think music's always just about talent, but really it's about a lot of effort and a lot of hard work and a lot of graft, and not putting something down when you're crap at it, which of course you are for years and years. So I like the sense of achievement and the collectiveness of playing with other people, the camaraderie of being in a band and looking after each other and making music together, and that moment when the kind of creativity works and everything sparks together. And musicians are nice people.
What area have you chosen to focus on for your PhD?
Right at the moment, I might be changing areas, which is common. I've been looking at constructs of sexuality within popular music, specifically how teenagers make use of popular music in order to construct, not necessarily their sexuality in the sense of if they're straight or gay, but the kind of identity and constructions of gender and where they see where they see themselves paralleled within music. So a lot of the work I've been looking at people like Britney Spears and Avril Lavigne and the type of messages that young girls get out of their music. The kind of general idea is that a pop star says do A and a kid does A, but I've been looking at the more complicated pathways of how teenagers take the messages they seek out of music and how they use a really wide range of not just music but television as well and film and all sorts of artistic artifacts to construct their identities, and they use it in a much more fluid and intelligent way than maybe things like newspapers and the media would make out. It's not as prescriptive from artists and how teenagers use it. So that's kind of where I am at the moment.
What do you do when you're not playing music?
I knit badly. I watch a lot of television because I'm really interested in popular culture, and I think a lot of people think that in order to look at the world they need to shun television and mass printed newspapers and rely on this really kind of narrow intelligentsia way of looking at the world, and I don't think that's where all the best ideas are, and I don't think that's where you really see what's happening in the world. And I find that watching really mindless television makes me think a lot more than reading something by someone who thinks they're intelligent. So I love watching things like Jeremy Kyle and Jordan's documentaries, and it really shows how where people's heads are at and where people are thinking. I also take photographs. I'm not a very good photographer, but I take photographs. I like going to festivals a lot. And I've got a cat, and I like to sit at home and drink tea and take on the cat and read a book. I'm quite a homebody now.
What's your cat called?
Vince Noir.
Why is it called Vince Noir?
After Vince Noir from Mighty Boosh. Vince is a girl, as Vince looks like a girl, and is a Maine Coon with long lustrous hair. She's very much of a dandy, so it seemed we were going to call her Morrissey, but it didn't suit her. She was far more of a Vince Noir.
What's home life like at the moment?
It's okay. One of my friends was due to move to Liverpool and to London from Liverpool and didn't. So there's that sense of having kept someone at home. I like this time of year as it gets up to the autumn and you're kind of bedding down for the winter and it's getting dark earlier and you get home and it's cold and you put the central heater on. So I hate the summer because we never have good summers. It's always really just disappointing. So you know what you're getting with autumn.
Who do you live with?
At the moment I'm living on my own. I just live with my friend Nadine, who's here today, and she's been moving about, so she's moved out now, but I tend to always have people in the house. I live right in the city centre of Liverpool and a lot of my friends live on the outskirts, so generally either my friend Nadine will be round or another friend of mine, Ellie, so it's a communal house but I pay the rent.
Have you got anyone special in your life at the moment?
Not at the moment, no. Just Vince.
Why did you decide to learn to knit?
I can't remember this. I get these things sometimes when something random will pop into my head, and like I want to learn German at the moment. And sometimes I do it and sometimes I don't. And I think I'd seen There's a kind of collective idea called Stitch and Bitch, where women and men get together in local coffee shops or people's living rooms and they stitch and talk. So I just sit there and knit, and more experienced knitters will teach. And I think I was having, this wasn't that long ago obviously, a conversation with my mum saying that I wanted to learn to knit, and she said she'd teach me. And my mum had broken her hip a few months ago, so I'd gone home for about a month just on and off, like obviously going home, but just to make sure she was okay. And she taught me to knit then, and I just kind of kept at it, although I'm not great at it. And at the same time, a few of my friends in Liverpool are kind of picking up knitting, so we've kind of got ourselves a little knitting circle, so it's helped me to keep to it. But I like the idea of knitting. I think it's a good skill to have, and it's really relaxing, and it kind of gives you something to focus your mind on. And because so much of my work is about my mind ticking over and thinking about things all the time, it can get a bit hectic. And when you're knitting, well, I'm not yet thinking about anything apart from how I get the needle into the next bit of wool. So it calms me down and kind of gives me, it's almost like meditation, it gives me a space to reflect.
What is your work on a day-to-day basis at the moment?
I'm just working on my PhD. So, four or five years, I've been working on my PhD alongside other jobs, often kind of like arts admin jobs and research work and lecturing, and it's all been taking the same kind of space in my mind as my research has, and it's got pushed so far back that I'm just trying to concentrate on that and then just get a really straightforward part-time job where I just turn up at work and do my job and come home. So at the moment I've got the luxury of just concentrating on my studies.
Have you got any hopes and visions for the future?
They change all the time. When I achieve things that I've wanted, I forget how much I wanted to achieve them, which isn't a good thing, is it? I'm in a band, we're drummerless. I'd like to get that properly back up running because we're doing quite well. And play some festivals next year. And I'd like to get my PhD finished. It's been so long now that it's not even about anything but knowing that I could complete that and develop a stable career that I'm happy with and happy in, and be happy and have friends and family around me that I love. That's all that really matters, isn't it, really?
So, if coming back to the plinth now, is there anything that you'd like to gain from your experience?
I think I've not come into it seeking to gain anything specifically, but it's such a outlandish, surreal thing to sit on the fourth plinth in Trafalgar Square, particularly at 5 a.m. I like the time that I've got. I think it's going to be quite peaceful up there, and seeing London from such a different perspective. I think I'd just like to know that I've really taken it in and enjoyed the time that I've had up there and not taken it for granted and then regret it later.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.